This is a coastal story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. We only really have Charles Adolphus King's word for it that his story was true. It was quite a story, and one that caused a sensation across Britain in 1840, fueling a bout of national soul-searching about the transportation of convicts to the other side of the world. It was a cold Monday night in November 1839 when Inspector Green, a prison keeper, and Sergeant Jackson of the constabulary did the rounds of the lodging houses. Wood Street, just off Deansgate in central Manchester, was one of their regular haunts, somewhere they wander in unannounced to the back kitchens where the itinerants, hawkers and peddlers, the transient urban poor, would be gathered round the stove trying to keep themselves warm. There was always a good chance of finding someone who'd been up to no good. Best way to catch them, really. No vulgar chases through rain-greasy streets with an unseemly struggle at the end. The villains were off guard this way. Nowhere to run. Much more straightforward. Green led Jackson through the back door of Wilson's boarding house on Wood Street. The lodgers turned to look at the newcomers bringing in the damp cold into the warmth of the room. One of the residents would have gone cold for different reasons. He shouldn't have been there. In fact, he shouldn't even have been in this hemisphere. Green immediately recognised Charlie Dolphus, an habitual criminal he'd last seen 4 years earlier, almost to the day, at the New Bailey in Salford, being led away from the court in shackles, staring down a sentence of 14 years transportation to Australia. He looked much older than his 23 years, but there was no mistaking the large scar running down his forehead from hairline to brow, a souvenir of a pub brawl. There was also the look in his eyes that knew the game was up. Dolphus came quietly, was locked in a cell, and a few days later stood up in the dock of the Borough Court and told his story. He'd had no complaints about the sentence he received. When he was caught in the act, burgling a house belonging to a Salford woman named Hannah Barnes, it was his third conviction for housebreaking in the space of 3 years. Originally from Newry, in what's now Northern Ireland, but long resident in Manchester, Charlie Dolphus was already an accomplished petty criminal by his mid-teens. He'd actually seen transportation as a chance for a new start. What he found in Australia soon removed any optimism on that score. Convicted of larceny on December the 7th, 1835, he was taken south and placed first in the prison hulk Justitia, moored at Woolwich, then the Fortitude at Chatham. At the end of May 1836, he was transferred to the convict ship Lady Kennaway, which departed the Downs off the east coast of Kent on the 11th of June, with 300 convicts on board. It took 4 months to reach Australia. Conditions on board were pretty bad. Each man slept in a space 18 inches wide. Two convicts died on the voyage. Once the Lady Kennaway had arrived at Port Jackson in Sydney, Charlie Dolphus spent 3 months breaking stones before being chosen by a well-to-do gentleman to be a member of his household staff. Now this was about as cushy a number as it got for convicts, and Charlie thought things might at last be looking up. He knew that if he behaved himself, he might even be awarded a ticket to leave after 7 or 8 years, rather than have to serve his full 14-year sentence. After a few weeks, though, possibly for misbehaving, or maybe the guy just didn't like his face, Charlie was abruptly returned to the road gangs, working way out in the bush, chained to the men behind and in front of him, breaking stones. They ate twice a day, a bowl of gruel made from corn, and worked from 4:30 in the morning until 2 in the afternoon, or much later if the foreman felt like it. They slept on pieces of bark in a cramped, fetid hut, and if they were caught whispering to each other during the night, were forced to their feet and made to stand until it was time to leave for the roads again. Extra motivation for the workers was provided by the triangles, wooden frames to which shirkers would be lashed, then flogged in front of the rest of the gangs, which happened several times a day. Around 2 years into his sentence, Charlie and an old lag named Daniel Morney decided anything had to be better than this. They'd make a break for it. If they died trying, well, that would, in a way, be a form of early release. One night, they somehow managed to slip out of the stockade, made their way to the coast, and followed it all the way back to Sydney. Seeing a whaling ship in the bay, they swam out under cover of darkness and hid among the supplies in the hold. 2 weeks they spent up to their necks in a cask of water before they were discovered. The captain, knowing the penalties he could face if found to be harbouring convicts, told the men he'd have to turn them in when they reached New Zealand. That night, they jumped into the sea. It was, they decided, probably better to drown than face the repercussions of escape. After swimming for several hours, the pair came across an abandoned canoe in the water, in which they managed to paddle to an island they'd seen on the horizon. Seeing fires through the undergrowth and not knowing quite how welcome they'd be among the indigenous people, the pair hid until they were discovered by a hunting party. Things were tense but not dangerous until one of the locals tried to take a belt Morney was wearing. He was quite fond of that belt, so a scuffle broke out, and the two convicts were beaten so badly Charlie was knocked out cold. When he came round, Morney was gone. He'd never see him again. A local woman bathed Charlie's wounds, gave him water, and indicated a small island near the horizon where he might be safe. He spent 3 months there, surviving on shellfish, until he saw a ship, lit a fire, was spotted, and a boat was sent to retrieve him. The ship was an English whaler, the Elizabeth, under Captain James Curry, sailing from the Bay of Islands for London with 1,400 barrels of whale oil. It's likely that Curry knew immediately Dollfuss was an escaped convict, but of all the lucky breaks he'd enjoyed, landing on this particular ship was probably the luckiest. Curry's wife Betsy was also on board with their 3 daughters, and Betsy was the daughter of a convict. Her mother had followed her father to Australia 3 years after his transportation, and they'd settled in Sydney, where Betsy had met and married James Curry. She'd seen firsthand how tough life was for convicts and would have heard Charlie's story with a sympathetic ear. Whether of his own volition or at the suggestion of his wife, instead of turning Charlie in, Captain Curry signed him onto the crew like any other mariner, even paying him the full sailor's rate of £10 when they reached London. It must have been a strange experience for Charlie, sailing up the English Channel, past the Downs from where the Lady Kennaway had sailed 3 years earlier, and then past the prison hulks moored at Woolwich and Deptford. Whether unsettled by the memories or not, he didn't hang around in London, making straight for the place he knew best, Manchester. He'd proved to be a natural sailor, and it seemed he'd finally got his life on some kind of track. After the kindness Betsy Curry had shown him, Charlie flourished in the discipline and routine of life aboard ship. When Inspector Green found him that night in the boarding house, he'd just returned from a voyage to and from Quebec. But here he was, in the dock again, facing another voyage in shackles. After telling his story, Charlie pleaded with the judge not to send him back. He'd rather hang, he said. The judge, whose first inclination had been to return him quick smart to Australia, decided in the light of his story to detain Charlie instead at Her Majesty's pleasure, leaving it to the Home Secretary to decide this unusual prisoner's fate. As he waited in prison, Charlie's story was picked up by the press. There was a huge outpouring of sympathy. and a petition asking the Home Secretary to show clemency ran to 20,000 signatures. And it worked. Instead of being returned to the Antipodes, Charlie Dolfus would serve 5 years in prison, four of them in solitary confinement, with a full pardon at the end of his term. He was sent to Millbank in London, where convicts awaiting transportation were often placed prior to being loaded onto the ships. Solitary confinement was probably a blessing in a sense. Knowing what was in store for these beaten, frightened men, it would have been hard to look them in the eye. On his release in 1845, Charlie was a changed man. Even his name had changed. Where it was Charlie Dolfus who'd been taken down from the dock, the man who emerged from Millbank was Charles Adolphus King, campaigner for penal reform. He spent the next few years travelling the country, giving lectures, telling his story, describing the terrible conditions and harsh treatment that awaited convicts down under. Sometimes he'd end his appearances by donning the kind of chains he'd worn on the road gangs. ...162,000 convicts were sent to Australia between 1788 and the end of transportation in 1868. Their sentences ranging from 7 years to life for crimes ranging from manslaughter to the theft of a handkerchief. Some served their time and returned. Others stayed and made a life for themselves on the other side of the world. More were worked to death or succumbed to disease and deprivation. Charlie Dolfus was one of the few to escape, and even fewer to make it back home. What became of him is a bit of a mystery. The last reference to one of his lectures is in 1857, when he would have been about 40 years old, a newspaper report praising him for his efforts to convince the youth of Huddersfield not to follow a life of crime. In 1888, a Charles Dolfus was sentenced at Lancashire Assizes to 9 months in prison for burglary, having been before convicted of a felony. Could it be that after everything, as he entered his 70s, Charles Adolphus King returned to Charlie Dolfus's old trade? That was A Coastal Story, and I'm Charlie Connolly. These stories are coming at you free of charge, but if you do enjoy them, please rate and review, and even buttonhole strangers on the street if you feel like it. The more listeners, the merrier, and all that. Now, I have a book coming out in June, with a bunch of stories like these from the English Channel. It's called The Channel. It'll be published by Orion, and you can pre-order it now, save you the bother nearer the time. The waves you can hear were recorded on Deal Beach at high tide in the wake of Storm Jorge on the 1st of March 2020.